The series is entitled The Revolutionary. And when you're dealing with the concept of being revolutionary, you're not talking about doing something that is the status quo. You're not talking about doing the same old stuff. You're talking about doing things that are, for some people, extreme. And the goal for all this is to take back a narrative about Jesus. One of the narratives that we have about Jesus is that for whatever reason, and I won't say I don't know. But Gramps, I think I know why the narrative about Jesus at times seems to be that Jesus was soft. The narrative suggests that Jesus was soft because he actually cared about people. But the reality is that Jesus actually executing and doing things wasn't really a soft act. The image of Jesus that I enjoy, and some of y'all should know this by now. If you don't know, pay attention, because this should give you insight into me that you never had before. My favorite image of Jesus is walking up into the temple. And when he walks into the temple and he sees what's happening there, he decides, and he don't wait for nobody. He doesn't wait for his disciples to back him up. He doesn't have a conference about it. He sees the money changing tables in the temple, and he decides on his own to run up on that table and flip it. And as only Jesus could, basically told them, "You done made my father's house a den of thieves." And then on top of that, he let the people that would not normally be welcome into the inner sanctum of the temple. Right. He brought them in that they might be healed. Yes. That's the Jesus I kick it with. Yes. That's the Jesus I fool with. That guy not only cared about people, but would challenge anybody to tell him that he couldn't do it. And so it is that deep belief that the narrative about Jesus has been taken and has been basically sanitized that I believe the Holy Spirit has led me this way. Because we need to stop sanitizing what Jesus has done. Can't do it no more. I can't. This is actually part of the beginning. I promise I'll get to the title of this first message, but this is just to set the terms for the series. I can't deal with folk that say they love Jesus and they can't love the revolution. I can't deal with people that will always tout the image of Jesus loving children, but will always find a way to say that his shed blood is too unsanitary for salvation. There are people in seminaries that have tried their best to come up with different theories of atonement that do not reflect the shedding of blood and the sacrificial nature of Jesus Christ. Which to me is an insult to the blood of Jesus, period. Amen. And the reason why it's such an insult is because no matter how you cut it, you and I needed somebody to come along with a bloodline that had what we needed to redeem us. It's one thing to take the blame as humanity for how we got into the mess. It's another thing when God comes up with the method and the way to make sure that he could get us out of the mess. And the way that it was chosen was through a vessel that would be 100% human, but filled with the very essence of God in the Godhead and being known as Jesus the Christ. And that's why today, in order to begin any revolution, to begin anything that is going to radically turn around the condition of our world, of our society, or anything else, we need to begin with understanding the revolutionary Jesus. And the only way you can begin to do that is recognize that, here we go, the title, it's in his blood. The first thing that's in his blood is salvation. We don't talk about salvation anymore. And nobody can tell me otherwise, because there was a time when it was at the forefront of everything that we did. And the reason we don't talk about it is because it's a messy situation. Who wants to talk about the fact that it is absolutely 100% needed? Who wants to talk about the fact that humanity was in such a bind that we needed to be rescued? Who wants to talk about the fact that even now in 2020, there's some of us that still need to be rescued? Because the very fact that we even admit that we have to be rescued means that we don't have everything necessary to preserve ourselves. Which then takes away the idea that we can independently bring ourselves out of stuff. That means that we as human beings have to be dependent upon somebody greater than us to do for us what we can't do for ourselves. And with all the things that we have taught, not just in the church, but in the world, we have taught our own bootstraps and our own this and our own that. And the truth is, you would not be here right now because of your own effort. The reality is, the only reason we're here is because we have a God who rescued us. Don't take any of the other stuff. The key is Jesus the Christ, God in flesh, took the time to do something we could not do for ourselves to redeem us from a mess that began over 4,000 years before the act of crucifixion. And today, we don't want to talk about it. Because it's nasty and unsanitary. The crucifixion, the idea of crucifixion, is still to this day considered to be the most heinous form of capital punishment that has ever been created in human history. It's been even considered to be sadistic in its nature, because it's not the nails that killed him. Physically, what took out Jesus was a fight between the body and gravity while being suspended in air and trying to find a way to breathe and to make it through. And we're not even counting the lashes he took before he got there, and the fact that he had to carry the cross while bleeding in the street for 300 yards. Who want to talk about that? We ain't talking about the fact that he bled all over a man who was caused to come out to help him there. We're not even talking about the blood that's already on the cross because of the suffering that he had before. Just the act of crucifixion alone was an act that caused suffocation to happen. And he endured it for 6 hours, which most human beings couldn't even go that long. It's nasty business. And I see why nobody wants to talk about it, because it's violent. But let me help you out for a second. As nasty as the event was, we needed his blood, because in his DNA was the salvation we needed to come out. How do I know that it was actually in his actual DNA? I had a little quick lesson, and I know that my wife will probably kill me if I mess up the things that I was taught again. But it's in DNA. Only 1% of our DNA basically codes our very existence. It is passed down from person to person. And if at some point our DNA is destroyed, if there's anything that is damaged in our DNA, the properties of that damaged DNA, it may exist, but it does not affect the coding of our being. So when you look at the lineage of Jesus the Christ, in his very lineage, you find salvation. And one of the places you find it is with a prostitute named Rahab. That's why we read Matthew. And that's why we're in Joshua. Because Rahab was the most unlikely person to be in the line of Jesus. Because how in the world can a black sheep help out in the process of a living Christ that will save all of us? She was the key to making sure that what God had in motion in the Old Testament of the people that he had called by his name to finally take over the land that he had promised even back to Moses. And here Joshua was with spies camping out and trying to find out what was happening in Jericho. And they were led by God to this prostitute's house. And she decided of her own accord to save these men from being tracked down by the king of Jericho and others who were seeking to take out their lives. They were known to be in the land to scout out what God had promised. And all of a sudden, this prostitute decided not to take them in as clients, but to take them in as the ones that would become the conquerors of Jericho. So when 5-0 decided to come to her door and they asked, where in the world are these men? She said, yeah, they came by, but they ain't here no more. Now, here's the deal. We know who she is and what she does. So lying in this state, this lie would actually cause them to think, well, they probably came by and did some quick stuff and left. Come on, be real for a second. I ain't saying all, you know what I'm talking about. She said they came by, but guess what? She didn't know who they were, but they went in what? A different direction. And then she said, if you go after them, they might not have gotten out the gate. And if you can chase them, you'll take over them. But at the meantime, she had already hidden these guys on the roof of her house. On the roof of her house, which was in the wall of Jericho. A wall that was 2 miles thick and had all kind of fortified nature to the point where you could live in the wall. She had put them under a whole lot of hay and said, hey, just stay here. I got you. And by the time they went in a different direction, they came out and she got them out and she looked at them and said, listen, this isn't in the selected text, but it's in the story and it's important, because you can't put a whole lot of verses in a text when you select it for, you know, preaching, because everybody gets nervous when you got 14, 15, 16, 17 verses. But in the story, it says that she decided once they got down and everything like that to tell them some news. And what she told them was, we know who you are. I know who you are. The whole city knows who you are. And everything about you precedes you. We know that, that God brought you through the Red Sea. We know that you have dominated everywhere you've gone. We know all this about you, so we know what's getting ready to happen. And let me tell you something. I not only know what's getting ready to happen, but because I'm smart, I'm going to make a deal with you. Can you just remember me and my family? And Joshua said yes. Why wouldn't he say yes? Because the woman decided to what? Save him from demise. You hearing what I'm saying? She rescued him when it didn't have to be so. So why wouldn't Joshua say yes? Church, do you know how many times the Lord has rescued you? And I ain't talking about no little pity stuff. I'm not talking about no pity pack stuff. I'm not just talking about when the Lord first saved you. I'm talking about other times when the Lord had to rescue you. I know you're hearing between rescue and salvation, but the Hebrew word for salvation is rescue. So it's not just save your soul. It is literally rescuing you out of trouble. Do you know how many times the Lord saved your life and how many times the Lord has brought you out of darkness and how many times God has brought you from the darkness into the marvelous light? How many times he rescued you from people, from stuff, from situations, seen and unseen? Every time you walk up in the church, something ought to catch a hold of you and remind you that he saved me for such a time as this. I don't have to worry about whether or not you shout or not, because when I come up in here and I think about what the Lord has done for me, every time he rescued me, it ought to cause a shout to come over my spirit. Salvation ought to do something different in you. Salvation ought to impact your life differently. Don't become David and say, restore to me the joy of my salvation. You and I ought to get to a place where every day our salvation impacts our lives differently. So how does it happen? Let me give you these things and I'm done. First, salvation impacts you differently because it helps you to what, have your order, your steps are ordered differently. Your steps are ordered differently. Salvation orders your steps differently. They could have hidden in other places, right? Joshua could have what? Made an executive decision that may not have been good for him. But the Lord led him and them spies to a place that others might not normally go. And in that place, they found covering. When you save for real, just go with me on this. This is not quote unquote a evangelical spin on salvation. When you save for real, there's just some things and places you ain't gonna go. And I'm not talking about stuff you may occasionally like to do. I'm talking about when you recognize you got a purpose and a destiny on your life. There are folk you don't need to be around. There are places you don't need to go. There is stuff that God has brought you out of for the intention on taking you where you ought to be. So guess what? You don't need to talk to the same people that you thought they were your friend, but they ain't nothing but saboteurs of your future. Delete the number. Y'all ain't hearing me. Delete the number. Because every time you talk to them about something God wants to do in your life, they always got something to say. They always got something to talk about. They're always trying to tell you, you can't do it. And God is trying to tell you, I will redirect every place and every path you have in order to let you know that I got you no matter where I send you. It may not look like what you want, but I got you anyhow. So when you know you're saved for real, you stop asking questions and you just tell God, thank you in advance. Number two, salvation impacts your life in this way. It covers you from your enemies. There was two coverings that was happening. Two. The text says, on the one side, that Rahab had hidden all these spies of Joshua under some flax, right? That's one. But here's the second cover. Because, you know, some things are explicit and some things are implicit. The second covering was when she actually approached the cops and said that they were there, but they had left. Now, for some people, that's a sticky place. She lied. Okay, let me make you feel better. She covered for them. Y'all know what that is. Some of y'all know what that is for real. She may have lied, but she covered for them. She redirected the enemy's attack. Man, I wish I was in the right church. If I was somewhere else right now, all of us would be running around right now. There are times that God has brought you out of stuff and put you in places that you didn't think were going to be helpful. And all of a sudden, God provided for you somebody, something, somewhere to cover for you, to redirect the enemy's attack. And every now and then you ought to shout about not, you ought to shout because you knew the enemy was on your tail. You saw the enemy coming. You knew they were hot on your trail. But somehow God redirected their path and said, go the other way. When they should have went right, they went left. When they should have went left, they went right. When they should have looked up, you were hidden where you needed to be hidden. God always has somebody, somewhere that's able to say, nope, they're not going to be attacked here, because the Bible said that no weapon that is formed against me shall prosper. Is there anybody in here that knows what I'm talking about? That every now and then you know that the enemy is trying to come in like a flood, but the Lord will lift up a standard against him, and guess what? Nothing that they can do will touch you. You ought to know that God's got you covered. You ought to know that God orders your steps. Last thing you ought to know, and that salvation ought to teach you and remind you, is that it reminds you that your position has changed. I'm ready to fly away right now off of this. Y'all don't understand. I had a rough start this morning. We gonna finish high. We done took off. I'm not ready to land yet, but guess what? Let's get ready to land. Hear you? Y'all ready? Here's the reminder that happened. It's not in the selected text because, again, I know us. We don't like a lot of reading. But read further in the second chapter of Joshua. Because after the enemy was diverted, she brought them out of hiding and began to tell them, we know who you are. What do you mean, Reverend? What do you mean? They were nomads for 40 years because of disobedience. Remember? Now they were a whole new generation that had been waiting for this moment. They've been waiting. All this time, they're sitting, looking at the promise, and they have not been able to go in. But then God said, now is the time. And what Rahab said just messed my world up. She listed everything going all the way back to the Red Sea. The Red Sea was 40 years before. And she went down the list and said, everybody knows who y'all are. Y'all been beating down folk, running over people. You've been doing all this stuff ever since then. And everybody's scared to death because they know that God is with you. And you're about to take us over too. God will put you in a position. See, this is what happens when you say, God will put you in a place where the enemy can't touch you, where your steps are ordered. But that provision that's been there for you will remind you that you are no longer the prey. You are the predator. Y'all don't know how to... Come on, I'm looking for a Pentecostal shout. Now, listen, you are not the prey. You are the predator. You are not on the defensive. You are on the offensive. Your reputation has gone ahead of you. And your reputation is only a reputation because God has been at work in your life. So if anybody talks about any victory that you have had, you can say it was not me, not by might, not by power, but by his spirit. I'm here today, not by my ability, but because he rescued me and he reminded me that I am not the prey, I'm the predator. Here's another word for it. I am more than a conqueror through him who loved me. So I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, things present, things to come, height, depth, or any other thing shall separate me. He saved me to conquer. So don't you walk out of here like you pray. Don't walk out of here like you can't make it. Don't you dare walk out of here after all this like somebody's going to take you over. The devil is a liar. You're here today because he rescued you. And because he rescued you, you got a chance to be on the offensive. Church needs to stop being in this position. Let me take you back to last week's fight. Deontay Wilder didn't lose because of his suit. Don't laugh at this because this is a reality. He didn't lose because of his 40-pound suit that he wore to the ring. He lost because he was always in a position of being defensive. They teach you about defense, but a good defense is actually, in the boxing world, a good offense. Which means that every time I step forward, I go in with my guard up, but I got my jab working. And I'm going to keep on throwing that jab until you open yourself up for a hook or an uppercut. And I'm not going to back down because you think that you're better than me. I'm not going to back down because you got a heavier fist. I'm not going to back down because everybody talks about your reputation for knocking me out. But I'm going to step up to you because nobody has ever stepped to you. Everybody has always been on the defensive and you've been able to get away with stuff. But I know that the strategy is if I step to you, you're going to have to back down. Here's the point. The enemy is always going to back down when the people of God step up. It's time for the people of God to stop backing down when stuff gets hard. It's time for us to stop backing down when trouble comes. Step up. You've been saved for a moment like this. So don't let Jericho pass you by a second time. Because the end of the Jericho story is this. And when they had marched around once a day for 6 days.
Yes.
And then six more times on the seventh day. And then on the seventh time. On the seventh day, they shouted.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they didn't have to lay a hand on anybody because God heard their call. And God flattened. No, the walls didn't come tumbling down. The walls were flattened. And the only ones that were saved from the rubble was the woman mentioned in Matthew 1:5, a prostitute that no one wanted, but eventually had somebody who found her, and they gave birth to the guy we're going to talk about next week, Boaz. Because there's more to his blood than just salvation. There's your preview of next week. God bless you.